Christians! 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 You! Why are you standing there? Put out this fire! Run! Bucket, shovels! Run!
Martin, when a limb is rotten, you must cut it off. You know that as well as I.
Get out!
Martin, this is for you! Let it burn!
Get out of Vicksburg before I beat you out!
Beat me out! I defended you! I supported you! I'm carrying on just as you would have!
You think this is my work? This is never my work!
No, it's the people's work! The people's work! It's the people's work! The people's work!
A scene from the Luther movie, an encounter, perhaps the final encounter, between Martin Luther returning to Wittenberg and his erstwhile teacher and professor, Karlstadt, who in Luther's absence decided to carry on the Reformation in his own fashion. They were known as the Iconoclasts, not the first to be called that, but they whitewashed churches, got rid of stained glass statuary, altars, pulpits, you name it. They basically turned the churches in Wittenberg into what churches, many Lutheran churches are today. Assembly halls devoid of any Christian symbolism, including crosses. And they did it in the name of the Reformation. We're going to be talking about the influence of Andreas Karlstadt on the Reformation then and today. Dr. Martin Nolan joins us for the next half hour of the program. You can join us as well. 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-MY-IE. Or email us, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Martin Nolan is a regular guest, past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Why do so many Lutheran churches today look like, if you walk in, see what's in there, listen to the preaching, they look more like theological descendants of Karlstadt rather than Luther?
This is a case in North America. If you go and do the same in Germany or Europe, I don't think you could necessarily make that statement. And that should tell you something right there, because North America, and especially the United States, is really the home territory. The home team is Puritanism and Reformed theology. And all you need to do is to go into New England, like Connecticut, Massachusetts, and look around you. There are very few Lutheran churches there, and most of what you see are Puritan Reformed type of churches, and they are just what you described. They're whitewashed, there are no images, and in many respects they reflect the theology and practice of Karlstadt. So I think you say, why do we see it today? What we see is the ongoing influence of Puritanism and Reformed thought in America.
Usually Karlstadt is kind of lumped in a minor way, a minor player in what we call the radical Reformation as opposed to the Reformation proper. What do we mean by this term, radical Reformation?
The radical reformers were not willing to work together with the political leaders. They wanted to strike out on their own and to go their own way. And Karlstadt was the first of those, at least in the Lutheran Reformation. Luther, though, as also did Zwingli and some of the other reformers, wanted to work together with the government that was existing. So you have either what's known as the magisterial Reformation, that is, people that worked with, let's say, city governments or the local ruler. Today we might call him the governor. That was the magisterial Reformation, which Luther was part of, and then you had these other reformers that didn't want to work with them because they didn't get along. They want to appeal more to the peasant class, and sometimes there was theological reasons behind it. So it's called radical because they went their own way. In many cases, the results were very radical by traditional standards of what the church looked like.
Luther's first exposure to Karlstadt was quite different than how they finally ended things. Who was Karlstadt, and what was his influence over Luther initially?
Luther and Karlstadt were colleagues at the University of Wittenberg, and in many respects, they were very similar. Karlstadt had an earned Ph.D. He had gone to University of Erfurt for his B.A., gone to Cologne, I believe, for his M.A., at the time when Luther arrived, about 1508 in Wittenberg, At that time, Karl Stott was the chairman of the Wittenberg University Theology Department. So they weren't quite in the same administrative apparatus, because Luther was at the Augustinian monastery. But part of Luther's call was to teach at the University of Wittenberg, so they ended up being colleagues that way. And they really were colleagues, because you can see, I believe after 1510, in a number of Luther's writings where he starts talking about our theology, and he's talking about developments that would eventually lead him to the Reformation ideas that he had. And when he said our theology, he's talking about Karl Stott. So really together, the two of them hatched the plans and the ideas behind the Lutheran Reformation. And, of course, they had a parting of the ways later on, but initially they were quite together and really close co-workers.
How did that parting of the ways occur?
The parting of the ways probably happened first because Luther and Karl Stott were both called for the debate in Leipzig in 1519. And Johannes Eck was the one that called this, and he was originally in a disputation privately with Karl Stott, because actually Karl Stott is the first one that came out with a series of theses calling for reform. These were the 151 theses in 1516. So Eck challenged those, and Luther came along for the ride because he had also published by then his 95 theses. And in the process, Eck thought he would try to get Luther too, and the crowd that listened to the debate was much more impressed with Luther. And at that point, Luther kind of came to the fore, even though he was Karl Stott's junior colleague. And I think that might have made things not go so well between the two of them, because it's a reversal of the order that was set up in Wittenberg and their relationship as a senior and junior faculty members. And then, of course, Luther took it on the chin from the Pope. He had to go to the Diet of Worms, and then he ended up stuck in the Wartburg for his own protection while Karl Stott was back home. And for whatever personal reasons, Karl Stott decided to initiate the reform that they had been talking about, but he did it without consulting with the city council or with the certainly with the elector Frederick of Wise. This was done in Christmas of 1521. And so he started making all sorts of changes, and this alarmed everybody because he was just kind of taking this upon himself. Eventually he was able to convince the city government, but then Elector Frederick the Wise did not like it. And so then eventually the city government asked Luther to come back and say, Luther, what are you going to do here? This guy's really going way off the deep end, and Luther said, yeah, he's really gone too far. And so that was the parting of the ways. Luther said, we don't need to do all these external reforms right now. It's too soon. It's offending too many people, and we don't have to do all these things right now. Well, that was the end of their relationship, and then Karl Stott was disgraced and eventually left Wittenberg.
With only about a minute before we take a break, should we conclude that Luther would have gone as far as Karl Stott wanted to go had Luther considered the time appropriate? Or was there a real difference here on how these external things were dealt with in the Reformation as far as Luther was concerned?
Well, it's clear by the end of his life that there were a number of changes which Karl Stott made that Luther would have never approved of. But also those that he did adopt in his own lifetime, that's by 1545, he still would have waited because Luther wanted to cooperate with the lay estate, that is, with the laymen that were in his congregation, the city government, and the prince. He wanted to have that support because he felt that this was part of his theology, that that's the left-hand kingdom, and you work with that. You don't fight it. And whereas Karl Stott really wanted to fight the left-hand kingdom, and that led him in the direction of actual revolution.
And then, with only about 30 seconds, were there any other major theological differences between Luther and Karl Stott?
Well, not initially, but after Karl Stott left Wittenberg, he began to teach that infants should not be baptized and that the Lord's Supper did not have the real presence. And this was definitely a theological issue, not just a matter of practice. And we haven't mentioned the matters of practice yet, which maybe we can do a little bit later. But definitely the differences on the sacraments was a big thing, and that left a permanent break between the two.
Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. You're listening to Issues Etc. live this Monday, September the 8th. I'm Todd Wilkin. You can join us with questions or comments. We're talking about the influence of radical reformer Andreas Karl Stott on the Reformation, not only then, but now. 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-MY-IE. You can email us here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Coming up a little bit later, after about 10 minutes, hour two of Issues Etc., Scott Klusendorf will be our guest. We'll talk about some statements, some clarifying statements made by Senator Barack Obama yesterday on ABC's This Week regarding his It's Above My Pay Grade statement that he'd made some weeks back regarding when a baby gets human rights. And then we'll begin a four-part series on the Apostles' Creed, God the Father, with Pastor Peter Bender. Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Will Wheaton, on the Treasury of Daily Prayer.
All I can say is prepare to be blown away. It's something I've never seen in the whole of Lutheran liturgical history. It's a complete daily office book and so much more, and it's in a single volume.
Order an advance copy of the Treasury of Daily Prayer by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or look for the cover at our website, issuesetc.org.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Sandra Tarvinen, Vanessa Haar, Andrew Gillett, Laura McBride, Darren Koneman, Raymond Tucker, Lori Ringenberg, Molly Patrick, Miriam Brower, and Michael Warnke. Thanks for your support.
Too Lutheran for a Lutheran radio station. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. is a team effort. Your phone calls, email, and snail mail help resurrect this worldwide outreach. Now we need your help to sustain Issues Etc. by making a gift to Lutheran Public Radio today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Help support Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the thinking Christian.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the Sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
They may have murdered Luther, but they will not stop what we have started. The holy war has just begun. Any man who holds himself up as the master of others, whether he be prince, pope, priest, even professor, must repent or be cut down. You call me Professor Carlstead. No more. From this day forward, I am Brother Andreas. And all of you, likewise, prepare yourselves for the great leveling.
Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Learn to despise props and pretensions. Stand with the righteous, or be cut down with the others. There is no middle ground.
Martin would never have shamed a student for wearing a crucifix.
I know Martin Luther. I discovered him.
He said reform. You want revolt.
You haven't got the stomach to finish what he starts in the lightsome. Step aside.
Why are you babbling in riddles?
Beware, or you too shall be cut down.
What?
Another little scene between Andreas Karlstadt and one of his students in Wittenberg from the Luther movie. Does your Lutheran church look and sound more like Andreas Karlstadt than Martin Luther? 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Dr. Martin Nolan, past director of the Concordia Historical Institute, is our guest. We're talking about Andreas Karlstadt for the next 10 minutes of the program. You mentioned before the break that he eventually, after fleeing Wittenberg, ends up at another town serving as a pastor and really put his reforms to work there, denying infant baptism, the bodily presence of Christ in the Lord's Supper. What was behind this? Do we have any insights from Karlstadt himself?
Well, I think most scholars say that he was really now becoming his own man in terms of probably the two of them, Luther and Karlstadt, had a common enemy, that is the papacy and Aristotle and Scholasticism, but probably had their own ideas. And so once he was let loose, as it were, from Luther's influence, he developed the own ideas in his own direction. The iconoclasm that you started out with, that is the destruction of images, it really fit in with the idea of the mystical ideal of the Middle Ages, or at least one of the ideas of mysticism, which is that the things of this world are they're a distraction. Or, you know, if you look, let's say, a painting of Mary, and you think that will help you meditate on her, the mystics would say, no, that's actually going to draw you to the beauty of that painting. You know, if you really want to get close to Mary, then you really need to close your eyes and kind of open up your heart to her and think about beautiful thoughts. So that's kind of the mystical way. And Karlstadt had that in him. And I think there's a strain of mysticism in the late Middle Ages that influenced Karlstadt and developed this. The other thing we have to realize about Karlstadt for our influence from him is that, and some scholars agree with this, that he was really the first Reformed Protestant. And that Christmas 1521 in Wittenberg was the first Reformed service. Because, you know, as you saw or heard on there, he got rid of his vestments. There was the attempt to make himself be known as Brother Andrew instead of the priest. Removal all reference to sacrifices and offerings. There was no elevation of the host. And he had a type of open communion where anybody could come to the Lord's Supper that wanted to without the examination of confession. And so that put together with the other things that he instituted in Orla Mundi, which was that was the congregation you talked about, this really puts him at the leadership head of the Reformed tradition. And the reason he doesn't get the press or publicity on it is because he was not entirely successful. He ended up being forced out of Orla Mundi because of the Peasants' War, and then took finally a professor's position, whereas Zwingli and Calvin ended up becoming the major cultural and religious figures, one in Zurich and the other in Geneva. And so everybody always looks to Zwingli and Calvin because they were successful. But they're really the ideas of this theology and practice, they start with Karlstadt.
Steve is listening in St. Louis. Steve, thanks for being patient. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks a lot. One thing that I've noticed about reading about the radical reformers is they always have this mindset, we're going to return the church to, quote, New Testament Christianity, but they seem to be at times ignorant of what the New Testament church was and very ignorant of the church fathers. I think that's where Luther's was brilliant, because he not only looked at the Bible, but he also said, well, here's what the church fathers said, to show that the Reformation was more in line with historic Christianity, and the radical reformers were kind of building it as they go.
Thank you very much, Steve. Marty, your response?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good observation, Steve. Luther, as the other Lutheran reformers, were very interested in taking all the, what we might say today, data that they could in order to learn what the New Testament was really saying. So they would look at, let's say, the writings in the time of the classics of the Greek and Roman authors, and they would look at the writings of the early church period and say, you know, what do these terms mean? Well, we can find what those words mean by looking around in the culture, and we can learn some of the effects of the apostolic church by what happened in the early church. So that gave them it gave the Lutheran reformers a much greater range of data that helped narrow in interpreting the Bible, whereas certainly the people like the radical reformers did not do that. Their idea was, let me just sit down with the Bible, and if I know a little bit of Greek, I can tell you what it means. Well, where the more difficult passages come, they're going to end up just interpreting whatever comes to their mind, or whoever happens to be the most influential person in their circle of religious context. So that's where they ended up making a lot of errors. But you're right, Luther and the other Lutheran reformers were interested in studying the fathers just for this reason.
Here's an email that comes from Paul in O'Fallon, Illinois. He says, could today's Lutheran churches look like Karlstadt? Would have had them because they don't want to offend anyone, so that they're neutral rather than trying to move from the things of the Roman Catholics, as Karlstadt seemed to have done?
In the case of Karlstadt, he's making a religious statement by what he did, and there's a good theological reason. At least it's his theological reason. I wouldn't say I agree with it. But today, where Lutheran churches, for example, they'll leave a very beautiful sanctuary that has a traditional architecture that when you walk in, you say, this is church. It has stained glass, it has images, and other things that help you. And they leave that, and then they go into a building that's totally blank. I think you have to say when they do that, unless it's purely for financial reasons, and most of these cases it's not, they're doing it exactly because they don't want to offend people that have come out of a Reformed Protestant American evangelical background. And this is the one thing that the people that my father grew up in, he was not a Lutheran. And so when he looked at Lutherans and saw what they did and how they believed their pastors dressed, he said, oh, they're Roman Catholics. And he didn't, until he had a friend in the Navy that was Lutheran and he had spent time with him talking about it, he said, well, no, they're really Protestants. So I think that there is a misguided attempt to avoid that sort of offense. But it's the wrong thing to do because you affect the church itself and its ability to worship well.
Dr. Martin Noland is past director of the Concordia Historical Institute and a regular guest here on the program. Good talking with you again, Marty, and thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
You know, something that Karlstadt probably would have tossed on the fire had he been able to get his hands on it, the latest offering from Concordia Publishing House called Treasury of Daily Prayer. Boy, it's a simple title for something that is such a resource. We're talking about catechism, scripture readings, hymns, and everything you could possibly use for family devotions or for personal devotions, for that matter. Treasury of Daily Prayer. You can find out more about it by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Now, the Karlstadts out there may want to toss this one into the fire, but I believe you will find a tremendous and invaluable resource for you and for your family, staying grounded in that faith once for all delivered to the saints. You know, there's no real use in trying to reinvent the wheel, and for some reason, there are pastors and congregations out there who think they're smart enough, bright enough, charismatic enough to reinvent the wheel that is the church every Sunday. Karlstadt tried that, ended up in a church where he actually had, through his own reinvention, given up the very truths of the faith. May God preserve us from that and from the ongoing influence of men like Karlstadt rather than the real reformers. When we come back from this break, hour two of Issues, Etc., Scott Klusendorf will be our guest. Senator Obama made some statements yesterday on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos. trying to respond to a question he had answered, saying it's above my pay grade when it came to human rights and babies. And then we'll talk about God the Father, the first in an ongoing series on the Apostles' Creed.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.